two scriptures. The first from the book of Leviticus, the 25th chapter and the 8th through the 10th verse. Count off 7 Sabbath of years, 7 times 7 years, so that 7 Sabbath of years amount to a period of 49 years. Then have the trumpet soundeth everywhere on the 10th day of the 7th month. On the Day of Atonement, sound the trumpet throughout your land. Consecrate the 50th year and proclaim liberty throughout the land to all its inhabitants. It shall be a jubilee for you. Each one of you is to return to his and her family property, and each to his own clan. And another description of jubilee from the book of Isaiah, the 40th chapter, verses 3 through 5. A voice of one calling, "In the wilderness prepare a way for the Lord. Make straight in the desert a highway for our God. Every valley shall be raised up. Every mountain and hill shall be made low. The rough ground shall become level, the rugged places a plain. And the glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all people will see it together, for the mouth of the Lord has spoken it." I'm very thankful to be here for the Family Enrichment Sunday here at Mount Olive Baptist Church. Families are such an important thing for everybody, for all cultures, churches, religious communities. And I'm especially happy to be part of a program that includes Harold Dean Trelier. If you don't know him, this brother is awesome. He is one of the most rigorous scholars. He's an awesome preacher. He's committed to the church and God, and not only uplifting African American communities, but uplifting all communities. So even though you're here this morning for this service, if you can get a chance to come back and hear him at 11 o'clock, I really encourage you to do that. He's been a very dear friend for more than 30 years. And in addition to all of that, the boy can sing. And I'm also honored to be here because of your pastor. When I first came to New Jersey, I heard a lot of people talking about different churches. And Mount Olive was one of those churches that a lot of different people and pastors and students told me about, because this was a church where you ministered to so many different parts of people's soul: the spiritual, the economic, the psychological, the social, the cultural. All of those things come together. And so many people told me about the careful mentoring that your pastor does for other pastors, for people who are just starting out on the journey. And you discovered that it's rare when people who have so much to do already spend time to minister and nurture and develop new people coming along. So for all those reasons and more, I am honored and blessed to be here with you this morning. The title of my talk for this morning is Making This Year Our Year of Jubilee. He was just wearing a hoodie. Trayvon Martin was killed on February 26th of this year in Sanford, Florida. He was a black child wearing a hoodie. He had gone to get something to eat, Skittles and iced tea. He was trying to return to the home where he was staying with his father for the weekend. He was wearing a hoodie. He had gone to get some sweets, and he was trying to get home. Simple, everyday events. It is disturbing for so many people of faith and conscience that such simple acts, wearing a hoodie, getting sweets, trying to get home, would lead to the death of a black child. It is shocking that a young black child is harmed doing what is every day for so many children, which was every day for so many of us when we were growing up, just wearing clothes that we were comfortable in, going out for a treat, the sign that this was going to be a good day, and the delight of knowing that we could do that all by ourselves. We didn't have to have mama and daddy with us. The givenness of an everyday life. So it is surprising that this child doing the everydayness got killed. That was a sense of shock. But what was even more of a sense of awe for me was the response of the black community. There was such intense response to that. Was it because this kid looked so innocent? You know, this wasn't a kid who looked like a gangster. Was it because this was a gated community and a place where people should be safe? Was it such a strong response because the killing took place or was done by somebody who was multiracial? Was it such a strong response because it was done by someone who was part of a security force, which symbolically felt like one more example of law enforcement being violent towards our children? I mean, I was caught by the response because sometimes it seems like there is so much violence towards our children, and sometimes it doesn't seem like there is quite this kind of response. I was in Chicago 3 weeks ago, and in my old neighborhood on the south side of Chicago, one weekend, one Saturday, there were 50 people who were shot. And 8 people died. And when you picked up the newspaper, they described the deaths almost the same way you would get the box scores at a baseball game, you know? And then the following weekend, there were 40 people shot in that same neighborhood. And again, there was a kind of a notice that there was a lot of shootings in that. So in 2 weekends, two Saturday nights, there were close to 100 shootings. 10 people died, but yet not nearly the kind of responses. And that was just Chicago. When you look at, and the same kind of thing was happening in Los Angeles and a number of other cities. We get sometimes almost numb to the violence that sweeps over our children like that of a tsunami. So why was it when this particular child got shot, who was wearing a hoodie, going out to get sweets, this particular child who was trying to get home, we wanted to know what happened. We were demanding answers. We wanted an explanation, and we wanted structural changes. When there are so many other black children who die on the sidewalks and no one is asking their name, what is the difference in this particular case? I'm wondering what was going on. I mean, I was so impressed by the response to the death of Trayvon Martin. I mean, when this particular kid died, for those next few months, it was something like I hadn't seen for such a long time. There were people in Congress wearing hoodies. There were huge numbers of black kids, bus drivers, senators, doctors, lawyers. They were wearing hoodies, and people were giving out Skittles. I was almost expecting Clarence Thomas to come out in a hoodie telling the other justices he ain't going to take it no more. That's how widespread this whole thing was. So why this kind of response? Why this widespread response? Why was this kind of response, this kid wearing a hoodie, eating Skittles, trying to get home? Why did it strike such a chord and moved throughout, and not just among African Americans. It was moving so many people. As I was struggling with this question, and particularly as I was thinking about coming here and being part of this event of enriching the black family and trying to understand this connection between hoodies and what it meant for us and what there was perhaps about his wearing a hoodie that maybe frightened other people. Was his wearing a hoodie something that led to his being shot? Was it something about that that was so intimidating? What is the meaning of this thing? And as I was struggling with all of that, I was going to graduation at Drew University. Around the time of May, graduation, big time. Students are all excited. Parents are coming. They're running back and forth. And everybody's talking about our hooding ceremonies. You know, hooding is very important in academic communities because once you have earned your hood, it really meant that you have accomplished something significant in life. Hoodings are really important for people who have studied something. Hooding ceremonies are so crucial among academics. It means that you have taken time to study something very closely. It meant that there is a critical analysis of a problem. It meant that people are doing problem solving, and with that problem solving and reflection, there is an expectation that there is a public announcement and communication about what people have learned. With that hooding, there is almost an understanding that you're going to be somewhat prophetic, that the hooding is connected to a public responsibility to talk about the ills of a society and to try to cure that. No, that can't be connected to our black kids wearing hoodies. Maybe there's not any connection there. They're just doing it for fashion. There's probably no connection between the two. But just as a side note, there are two other groups that are very strongly connected to the wearing of hoods. One are monks. Monks for centuries have always worn hoods. Hoods are also significant in religious communities because they symbolize people who are committed to a particular kind of spiritual life. It means people have committed their life to signal something spiritually for themselves and for their larger communities. And the third group is the group who brought hoods to the United States. And those were people who were living and working in harsh environments and conditions. It was workmen who were working in upstate New York, working outside in the cold. So academics wear a lot of hoods and hoodies, those people who study problems closely. Those people who are living and working in harsh conditions, and those people for whom a particular kind of spiritual traditions are very important. And I'm wondering if any of that is related to our teenagers. I mean, I'm just wondering. I mean, because they are so vulnerable, because they have less power than anybody else, because they are so dependent upon what everybody else does, I wonder if they are seeing our society and they have something to tell us that maybe we ought to hear, and that is symbolic of their wearing their own hoodies. I mean, it may be somewhat conscious. It may be somewhat unconscious. It could be somewhat in the spiritual unconsciousness of both them and us, and it's a word that we ought to hear. Maybe they are telling us something about our society where in some cities with African Americans, 70% of all African American men are under the supervision of the courts. Maybe they're telling us something about our homes where it is more violent for African American kids to be in the home than to be anywhere else. If we were to listen to our children, they would even tell us something about our families. I've been doing family counseling now for about 25 to 30 years. And usually when I bring families in, the mothers and the fathers, they'll say everything is okay, but sometimes we just have a problem communicating. We just don't talk enough. If I've got a 6 or 7 year old who comes in the room with the parents, if I've got that 6 or 7 year old with me, they can lay out things in the family that nobody would talk about in the next 2 years of analysis. They can say mommy and daddy have been fighting with their fists, that people have been throwing stuff, that we haven't had enough money for milk or bread in a long time. All of those family secrets that nobody wants to talk about. The truth that should be told if there's going to be change, children and kids know, and they'll be willing to talk about. And maybe that's what hoodies are starting to symbolize. If you're wanting to know what people in a family fear most, if you want to know what your true attitudes are about sexuality, money, power, or other family members, sometimes those people in the families who are wearing hoods can tell you that, and you've got to have that information if you're going to enrich the family. Clothing is so important. It is so symbolic. When I was a kid growing up in D.C., one of the habits, ways that kids dress, I know that drives y'all crazy, is this habit that black kids have now where they're wearing their underwear out. Yeah, y'all don't like that, do you? I was caught by it because when I was growing up in D.C., we used to do the same thing. It was very curious. This was in the 60s. And what I remember was, I'm assuming, but y'all have to remember that I do weird kind of work. I live in a world where everything is symbolic. Everything is symbolic. And that's maybe why when we read the Bible, we find all sorts of weird things with kind of interpretations. Once when I was in over in Israel, and I was working with the Palestinians. The Palestinians set their clocks during the middle of the revolution an hour ahead of everybody else. So if the Israelis' watch were 12 o'clock, the Palestinians had their watch at 1 o'clock, saying that time is going to change. It's moving ahead. It's faster than what you think. Clothing has always been very symbolic. It tells us how we think about ourselves and the world. And each generation has always hated what the generations in front of them or behind them have worn. So my grandfather always hated my father's zoot suit. My father always hated my dashiki and my afros. In D.C., when I was growing up, it was a city that was 95% black, and there were no black policemen, or hardly none. And the police were shooting, beating, arresting, much like your stop and frisk here, and nobody would talk about that. People would talk about new cars. People would talk about what kind of home you had. People would talk about what kind of good government job you had. But no, oh, and if people talked about programs for youth, they would talk about getting us a basketball court. But nobody really talked about schools that really wasn't teaching us how to read. So the secrets that people were trying to hide, like underwear, were all of a sudden on the outside. I mean, what we're doing is we're trying to tell them that if they dress like everybody else, if they try to fit in, that maybe they're going to get over. And when they put their underwear on the outside, maybe that's a way of saying to us, we don't have medical treatment, our schools are falling apart, we don't have hospitalization, there's violence anywhere. Police can do anything they want to with us. There are no jobs in the United States. Most of you have lost your mortgage. Pension plans have been taken away left and right, and you're trying to tell us that if we tuck our shirts in, everything's going to be all right? Is that the deal? Is that where we are fighting the battle? Those things that were secret, those things that we have been trying to hide, we are now going to make public. So maybe until the quality of life goes up, the pants ought to stay down. Maybe until we speak the truth up, the pants ought to stay down. Maybe until the quality of life goes up, they're the ones who are willing to say that in a lot of homes, we will do everything that we can for our children. And there's a lot of black parents that I know who will drive their kids to work. They will drive their kids to school. They will stay up and study. But we also know that in black families, as within most families, half the families in the church and in the country, there is such rates of abuse and violence and disrespect. And yet we say, this is how you ought to dress, and these are the places where we make the issues. So their wearing hoodies is their way of being prophetic. Their way of dressing is their way of saying, much like the zoot suit, it is important to start telling the truth, and we cannot enrich ourselves, our life, or our country until that begins to happen. Theirs is a life where hoodie says that this is a difficult place. It is a life where they are preparing for harsh conditions. When just a couple of weeks ago, it was the conclusion of the trial, which I thought was very symbolic in New Orleans, for those police officers who shot those families. And if you notice, it was families that were trying to cross that bridge coming out of New Orleans. Families who, like Trayvon Martin, were just trying to get food. What is going on in a nation when people stay in a city for 5 days without food or water or electricity or a place to stay, and they're just trying to find food, and police officers are shooting them, and that there's not a larger human cry? When more and more people are homeless and there's not a larger human cry, that in order to be able to have a richer, stronger family on the inside, you need to be able to have supports for that, both within the community and within the state and within the country. And when people are going for a food, whether they're crossing a bridge or walking through a gated community, they need to know that they are not going to be harmed emotionally or physically, and somebody's got to raise the battle cry. Hoodies is dedication to a particular kind of spirituality. It is a spirituality of lamentations. It is a spirituality of lamentations. Toni Morrison says, I mean, there is a lot of what our youth do in terms of music and song and stuff that people have a lot of problems with. They say that it is violent and patriarchal and a lot of other stuff, and that stuff is, and all of that is true. But Toni Morrison also said that they are mourning, they are grieving the things that the rest of us won't grieve. She says that until we know the names of all of those people who died in the Middle Passage, our youth will continue to make the kind of music that they did. Until we know the names of all of those people in slavery who died with nobody ever recording the meaning of their death, our youth will continue to sing the songs that they did. That theirs is a song of protest and grief that both connects us to our ancestors as well as anticipates the possible change in the future. That it is a demand for justice not only from their community, but Lamentations is also a demand for justice from God. It's also saying some of the times, God, how can you be so goddamn silent when there are so many people dying? And it isn't to doubt God. To confront God like that says, God, I know one day you will be with us. But like Jacob and Job, it is wrestling with God, with brother, with hope and expectations, and with the pain that all that was lost. I like the group Nas. I drive my children crazy because they think that somebody with gray hair who's a seminary professor ought not to listen to rap music. So they're embarrassed and they go out the house when I. But just listen to this one song. It's an older rap song. Can we please have a moment of silence for all of my niggas doing years of confinement, for all my soldiers who passed over, no longer living, who couldn't run whenever the Reaper came to get them. Can we please pour out some liquor? Can we please have a moment for children who got raped or murdered or trapped in the system, who never knew their father, never learned to dream, but was guided by drug dealers, killers, and crack fiends, for single mothers that forced to play mom and dad, as days come by and night falls, for the rest of our life we'll miss y'all, and even though life must go on, we'll still mourn while wishing all of y'all were home. The hooded tradition says maybe they, because of their increased vulnerability, not only within the homes, but within the overall society, they are the most disposable. They are cannon fodder for so much of society, and because of that, they might be studying it and reading it close, and we may need to hear what they have to say. So often we're constantly teaching them what they need to know, but are we also listening? And she said, Toni Morrison said, that at one point, those kids of ours that are treated like cannon fodder may destroy the cannon of Western imperialism. Maybe she's right. Maybe their hoodies, in addition to everything else, is a call for and an anticipation for Jubilee, or to make this a year of Jubilee. Jubilee is such a fascinating term. I love the concept of Jubilee. Jubilee is like a Sabbath of Sabbaths. It's a Sabbath of Sabbath, and the Sabbath day is something that God created specifically for us. When the children of Israel were leaving Egypt, God created the Sabbath, not for God. God created the Sabbath for the ex-slaves. In Egypt, slaves never had a day off. So if you gave them a day off, what it said was, on this day, you cannot act like a slave. The Sabbath was a day when people had to confront and say, I am no longer a slave. I've got to live like a new creature. It is a way of saying, I am no longer who I was back then. I can live in a new way and build my community. And because they were no longer a slave, this was a sign for them between them and God. So it wasn't so much for them to honor God. That was really secondary to the Sabbath being a kind of spiritual symbol that says, my God, I can enjoy life and be a new creature. A couple of weeks ago, when a group of kids, 12 through 13, were asked what Jubilee meant for them. You know, sometimes when people hear about the year of Jubilee, they're thinking about ecology and restoring the earth and all of this other stuff. For this group of kids who were 10 through 13, one kid said, a year of Jubilee for me would mean when my mother's boyfriend comes over the house. Just several weeks ago, my mother took me so that we could buy a gun so that the next time he starts beating her, both of us are going to go get a gun so that I can protect my mother. A year of Jubilee for me would mean I and my mother don't have to sit on the couch with a gun. There was another kid in that same class who said, a year of Jubilee for me would mean that what I did yesterday, when me and my mother went to go look for her sister when we hadn't found her or heard from her for a couple of days, when we did find her She was stabbed, and a year of Jubilee for me would mean nobody else in my family would get killed. There was another kid in that same class, this is one Sunday school class in one church, who said that a year of Jubilee for me would mean I stayed out last night all night on the basketball court, 12-year-old boy, stayed out till 5 in the morning. Nobody in my family cared that I was gone all night. For these kids, a year of Jubilee means that their family now cares where they are. It means that there is safety and protection around them. It means that nobody has to worry about is somebody that they are close and intimate to going to harm them. That we are going to be new creatures and we're going to be able to create a new land. A year of Jubilee is a time where we as the church are going to help to create new families and new institutions, and it's during that day that we can help turn our children's lamentations into shouts of joy. Amen.